Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The link will be posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After this share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OE program or what the speaker has shared. I'd like to welcome Susie H., a compulsive overeater from Virginia. Welcome, Susie.
Thank you, Donna. Thanks, everybody. It's nice to see everybody here. What a nice group for a Sunday night. And yeah, I live in Richmond, Virginia, and I just wanted to say for credibility for my Canadian friends here, we had snow on Friday, which is a big deal here. So yeah, I've been in OA for a long time. I guess I should just qualify a little bit. I came in I came in originally in 1979 just to try it out because I had trouble with my food and my weight. And I heard about God and I did not want to stay. So I went back out the door, ate for another 10 years, came back really, really beaten up in 1989, have stayed since then. Thank God I haven't left since then. I won't in any way say that everything was smooth or rosy, but I haven't left. And I guess when I came in, well, I don't even really know what my weight was. I think I've lost about 40 pounds in the program. And I weigh now about 150 pounds. I'm 73 years old. Let's see, what else do you tell in the beginning? Well, at any rate, I'll tell my story. So that'll be the way it goes. I'm from outside of Chicago, and I'm from a family that was Jewish, but absolutely no religion and absolutely no spirituality. In fact, the opposite. I was specifically brought up to be an atheist by my dad, mostly, who had opinions on that. And I didn't really question his opinions. I just took them and didn't really think about it. And so, as you can imagine, when I did get to program, that was a bit of a problem to overcome. But yeah, my dad was obese all of his life, or most of his life that I knew him. He, I guess he got up to as high as maybe like about 280 pounds. He got diagnosed with type 2 diabetes when he was about 45. He did not die of it. He died of lung cancer when he was 69, but his type 2 diabetes caused a lot of physical problems for him. He had a leg bypass. He had a quintuple heart bypass. He had been a private pilot for fun, and they don't let insulin dependent diabetics have pilot licenses. So that was taken away from him. He was also the kind of diabetic that if he lost some weight, which he did sometimes, he could get off insulin. And if he lost more weight, he could get off glucocorticoid pills. And then as weight went up, he had to go back on pills, and if it went up more, back on insulin. So I have a really, really clear understanding of the fatality of this disease, which is good for me. It's been really good for me in terms of taking this extremely seriously and not seeing it as an appearance issue. It's way more than that to me. And I have to add, sadly, that my younger sister, I only have one sibling, a younger sister who also was obese, who also ended up with heart disease as a result of type 2 diabetes. And she passed away 3.5 years ago from a massive heart attack. And so that was awful. I really did not expect to go through the end of my life without my little sister. So yeah, could not be clearer that this disease is fatal and that I need to take my recovery actions seriously. So, As a kid, I was kind of a goody-goody. Well, there are a lot of rules in my house, and I decided to obey the rules. And part of making it look good, being a teacher's pet kind of kid, for me meant a lot of lying, a lot of dishonesty, a lot of trying to make things look better than they actually were. So lying came very natural to me. I think I was good at it. I don't think that I understood, any real negative consequences from doing it for a long, long time. So it was just second nature to me. And my life was good. My family was loving, and I knew I was getting plenty of attention and love. And my parents really loved each other. I did not have a traumatic background. I'm here to say you can have this disease without trauma. I definitely have the disease. And I had a pretty easy life. And I started having, I guess I was chubby as a kid. You wouldn't say obese or anything like that. But by the time I was maybe 10, I thought I was maybe a little chubbier than I should be. And I would sneak food. Absolutely, I would. And then as I got into high school, it went well enough for me. Middle school was awful. I don't know anybody really that liked middle school, but high school was fine, and I had friends and I had dates, and I had drama, but nothing major. And I dieted. I definitely dieted. I had gallbladder disease when I was a kid, when I was like 16. And even so, I didn't know that there was anything wrong. I got my gallbladder attacks on big holidays when I was eating huge amounts of food. So, I didn't put any of that together. As I got to college, things got to be more of a problem. I would use my increasing freedom, my increasing pocket money to get food and eat food. And Friday night was like, binge night with my boyfriend, and we'd get a bunch of junk food and eat it. And by the time I graduated, I think I weighed something over 140 pounds. And that to me was horrible, at 22, way too much. And I got my first job in the New York suburbs. And I remember reading about a diet doctor in a magazine, and he was in New York. I could go take my car down to New York and pay money to him. And I did that, and he gave me a very restrictive diet and some tapes to listen to. And I lost a bunch of weight. I remember getting down to like 125. And, I do remember having a big episode of body dysmorphia just then. I was looking in the mirror after I'd lost all that weight, and I couldn't tell if I was fat or thin, and it was very disturbing. But I had that initial brush with OA in Philadelphia in 1979, and as I said, ran right out the door and came back 10 years later after getting married and having two kids, and just, kind of mercilessly up and down the scale. I was told I could share pictures. I don't usually do this, but I have them where I can get a hold of them. And yeah, my top weight was ever was 205 the first time I was pregnant, which you can see there. And it's not because I gained 50 pounds during the pregnancy. It's because I started that pregnancy at 195. And then the other two pictures, I'm just reading the notes, were when I was in program but lying about my weight, which is a big feature of my story. But I couldn't really blast myself. I was pretty attached to my kids and couldn't really free myself from the house until the second one was 2 years old. And then I felt pretty good about leaving her with a sitter with my husband to go. And I knew where to go. Thank God I had had that early encounter with OA. I knew how to find it, what it was, and what to do when I got there. And what I did was, go to six meetings like I was told. And I was in Southwest Connecticut at that time, Stamford, Greenwich area, and the meetings weren't great, but I went around to everything that was available and, started right away as soon as I could find a sponsor. I found somebody that was a young mom like me, and she had been around for 10 years and she had some abstinence going, but she quickly lost her abstinence. Although, she did start me on steps, which was great. I did get abstinent right away. People said, put up your hand to lead a meeting. I did that. After I had 30 days of abstinence, they said, put up your hand as an available sponsor. Seems a little crazy to me now, but I did that. And I just was a good little newbie, which sort of came naturally to me. And I did what I was told, and I stayed abstinent, got another sponsor, stayed abstinent for about 9 months. And then I came back from a vacation through which I had stayed abstinent. And I think I was in an airport lounge, and my stomach was a little upset, and there was a piece of fruit there, and I ate the piece of fruit, which sounds like not that big a deal, but it wasn't on my food plan for the day. And it kicked off a relapse that went for 9 months. And I was very confused. I didn't really know what was happening. There was somebody in one of my groups that had been thin when I came in, but now she wasn't thin anymore. And I thought, maybe she knows something about relapse. And I called her because, I had been trained to use all the tools. I wasn't afraid to call people. And she said, "Yeah, I just came out of relapse. And I do. Are you going to the meeting on Friday? We could have coffee after and talk about it." And I said, "Sure." So we did that. And she said, "Yeah, what happened to me was I was talking to somebody from program, and they said, 'Look, there's this whole program here. Why don't you just do the program?'" So I thought about that, and I thought, "Well, what could I be doing that I'm not doing?" And I thought, "Well, maybe I was going to two meetings a week. I thought maybe I could go to more." So I went to one in Norwalk, Connecticut, where I heard a speaker who, like me, had been abstinent for a while and then in relapse, and now was back again with 9 months of abstinence. And she sounded like she had a very strong AA program behind her too. So I went right up to her and asked if she would sponsor me, and she agreed to do that. And she started me. I mean, I had been reading in the Big Book right from the beginning. We had a regular Big Book meeting, and I had been introduced to it, but I will be the first to tell you that I had no idea that the program of recovery is the first 164 pages of the Big Book. Nobody ever told me that until about 11 years ago. I just didn't know, even though I was reading Big Book all the time. And so I didn't get a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff I didn't get in program for a long time. It's complicated. I hope nobody follows my path. But if you're already on a path like me where there's lots of relapses that seem like they'll never end, I'm here to give you hope that that can end. She started me out on a Big Book method of working the steps, and it was just you two sessions that you would sit down and I'm not sure I can remember but you had two big writing sessions where you sat down and wrote on two different topics, and then I turned it all over to her, and while she was taking my fifth step, she was making tally marks of which of these things fell under which of the seven deadly sins, which was weird for me being Jewish, but that's what she did. And she read them back to me, and I didn't feel that good about it, but whatever, whatever. And I stuck with her as a sponsor for a long time, and I don't really remember how that sponsorship ended, but I kept going. At a certain point, I got to a certain point in the steps with her, and I relapsed. And I told her, and she took me back to step one, and we started the steps again, and I relapsed again with the food. And she took me back to step one, and all I can say is maybe by about the third time that that happened, I was just embarrassed, and I started lying about it, and I just lied about being abstinent for, oh, a long, long time. And during that time, I moved for 2 years from Connecticut to Madrid, Spain, and I lied to, there were meetings in English in Madrid at that time too, a week. And so that was great, but I was lying to all them about being abstinent, and I was the contact person for the meetings, and I was sponsoring people and letting people celebrate abstinence anniversaries for me. And oh, it wasn't good. I felt like a bad person. And when I came back to Connecticut after 2 years, came back to the same place, same very good meeting by that time, I just knew that if I couldn't figure out something about how to get honest, I was never going to figure out how to get abstinent and keep it. So I picked a sponsor that was somebody that I knew and trusted and wasn't afraid of. And I just told her the truth about my food every day for a year. And by the end of the year, sometime in there, I was abstinent. And that abstinence stuck for a good long while, but not forever. I moved to Richmond in 2002. And somewhere along in there, I lost my abstinence again. And again, the way that I got kicked out of that relapse was I went to a speaker meeting. I heard a speaker share who had been abstinent, had been in relapse, and was again abstinent. And I left that meeting and turned to a friend and said, I'm in trouble. And she said, I will help you. And she agreed to sponsor me because the sponsor I had at that time just really didn't have much time for me. And I was doing all kinds of service jobs because I've always done a lot of service in OA. I like it. It makes me feel like part of things. And so I called and resigned all of my service positions and I signed up for some outside help and whatnot. I did get abstinent right away. So even by the time I went for the outside help, I had 6 weeks of abstinence. And that's the abstinence that I have. That was in 2006. Yeah, 2006. So in February, next February, this coming February, God willing, I will have 20 years, which is incredible to me because that was 17 years of on and off relapse, 17, 17, a lot of years of feeling bad, of being a liar, of thinking I was never going to get it. I certainly thought of leaving meetings many times, but when I would think about it, I would think, where would I go? Where would I go and what would happen to me? It was easy to know what would happen to me. I would be 400 pounds. I have a 400 pounder in me for sure. I have no doubt about it. And you know, the thing is, with even with all the relapses, I stayed, I did not regain tons of weight. I regained some, but nobody has ever even diagnosed me as pre-diabetic. Thank God, thank God, thank God. Like I said, I'm 73. I'm reasonably healthy. I'm still married to the same guy. I have adult children that I get along with very well. I have two grandchildren. I have friends. I'm retired, but I have great hobbies and activities, and we travel a lot, and I'm able to stay abstinent, and life is amazingly good. And that's just 100% the gift of this program, as far as I'm concerned. I did obviously figure out how to have some spiritual connection and a spiritual life slowly. I mean, it started in the very, very earliest days with just gratitude. I heard people talking about gratitude, and I thought, well, I know I've been lucky in my life. I've had an easy life, and maybe I could think about being grateful for that. And so I thought about that. And that was, like it says in the literature, just enough to crack the door open for me and to let thoughts of a higher power come in. And I believe that a lot of my relapses had to do with just not understanding what it meant to enlarge my spiritual life. I mean, I knew I was supposed to do it, I didn't know what it meant. And I certainly didn't know how to do it. I had a friend in Connecticut and older friend who shared some books with me one time, spiritual books. And I picked those up, and I ever since have taken up the habit of when some spiritual material crosses my path, I'll take a look at it and see if there's something there for me. So that's one thing that I figured out to do. But in general, my spiritual growth has felt a lot like somebody that's learning to drive a stick shift. It's been not very smooth or elegant, but kind of jarring, getting kicked up to the next level or not. So from 2006, yeah, I was here in Richmond and doing what I was doing. And we got an opportunity. My husband got a job opportunity in San Diego, and we had had such a wonderful time for 10 years in Richmond and met such nice people here and made such great friendships. And we thought, well, maybe we're supposed to try this again and do this again and meet more people in another new place. And I actually turned that over to my higher power, and I got what seemed like a sign to me. And so we went to San Diego, and I immersed myself in OA there immediately. And that was great. I put up my hand when somebody said they were looking for an intergroup treasurer. I said I could do that. And I went around to a lot of different meetings. That's a big area. And when I lived there in 2015, there were a lot of meetings. And being the treasurer, everybody got to know me because I would stand up in front of the intergroup meeting. And we had an office there and a meeting place that was central. and program there was very, very strong. And one of the things that I encountered there was a particular method of working the steps using the big book, quite different from what I had done with that early sponsor. And this is a very programmed, particular method of working the steps. And it came along at a time that I really needed it because I had a bunch of health problems in San Diego just by chance, no reason, but they happened there. And also, it didn't work out friendship-wise the way that I had hoped, the way that it had in Richmond. And so I was kind of lonely. And the people were doing this method, and I mentioned it to my sponsor. I got a sponsor there, and we had worked the steps using the OA 12 and 12 just to get to know each other. And then she said, "What would you like to do next?" And I said, "Well, I heard about this method people are doing." She said, "Oh, yeah, it's supposed to be great. Why don't you try that?" So they were starting a workshop, and I went to somebody's house. And as is typical, sorry, I'm getting over a cold. As is typical for that method, a lot of people came to the introductory meeting, and then we ended up with three people doing the workshop. And I didn't like anything about it. I thought it was just tedious and boring and horrible. And when I didn't understand much about what was happening to me. I know the first step was super painful because it makes you just really, really look at your powerlessness, like smash it into your face. And this is no fun at all. And then the interesting thing about the fourth step in this method was that another thing I had not understood at all about fourth step was when it talked about you're supposed to figure out the exact nature of your wrongs. And not only could I not figure out the exact nature of my wrongs, I didn't even really know what was meant by the exact nature of my wrongs. So this method sort of gave me some clues about that. And I went through with all this, and I did everything that they said, and fine. And I thought, well, now I'm done. I'll never have to do that again. Thank God. But somehow the next January, when they were starting the workshop again, I found myself at this lady's house again. I don't remember making a decision to do it, but I did it. And by the second time I went through, I started to have a bit of a clue. And the main thing that I got was, you should probably be looking for more meditative practices. You should probably be looking for more opportunities to connect with your higher power, more step 11 stuff. So I thought, well, maybe some kind of like oriental meditation thing. And I went around and I looked at some Tai Chi classes and some stuff. And I ended up finding Qigong at my local senior center. And it seemed kind of spiritual. And the people there seemed to have something going. And I was still going to a lot of meetings and doing a lot of stuff. And this particular big book step method, one of the big things that they emphasized was, hey, once you've been through this, you should be taking other people through this using the big book. So I'm like, well, nobody's ever going to ask me to take them through. I don't have to worry about that. But then I was moving back to Richmond. We came back in 2015, and a friend of mine here said, "Ugh, my program is a mess. I need something new." And I said, "Well, I've got this method." And she said, "I'll do it." And I said, "Well, it would be better if you were in a group." And she said, "I'll get a group." So we did it. We did it here, and we did another group after that, and did a couple of more groups after that. So I ended up, taking a bunch of people through, and the individuals too. I took a bunch of sponsees through one by one, and never expected to do any of that. And so that was nice. And what it did for me was it kept my head in it. It kept my head in the big book, and it kept my head in the solution, and it kept reminding me all the time of what I needed to be doing. And I can only say that it worked a lot on me. I feel like this method, as well as all the previous times that I had been through the steps, which were a lot of times, I don't know why it had to be this way for me, but it's like if you had to kind of, you had a big slab of stone like a sculptor would have, and you just had to chip away and chip away and chip away at all the crap that God wanted to get rid of to end up with, what was supposed to be there and what was supposed to be working and chugging along. And this is why I think, in spite of the fact that I really used to be a resentment factory, and that was the way that I lived my life. I lived my life believing, I think I got this from my parents, that, that we knew the way to live. We knew the right way to live, and everybody should be living that way. And everybody was always not living that way and not doing what I thought they should be doing, which gave me the permission to resent them and judge them. And so that's what I did. That was essentially my way of being in life. And I certainly found through, again, having it smashed in my face, that resentment is not going to help. Resentment is the number one offender. It'll take me back to food faster than anything. Under resentment, 100% of the time, for me at least, is fear. There's always fear that I'm going to lose something that I have or not get something that I want. So, there's that. And if there's a higher power, I don't have to be afraid. So I was living in some, the big book says
That's
we
five
only had
minutes.
two choices. Thank you. We can live a spiritual life or we can go on to the bitter end, die. And if I'm living a spiritual life, then I have to depend on God. I have to depend on God 100%. And all for all the stuff. I mean, I don't get to cling to anything. I don't get to keep this little area of my life and be in charge of that. I really have to give it all to God. That's the only way that it works. If I try and hold on to other stuff, it stops working. Really, really annoying, but that's my experience. And so now I do look for opportunity. I've always done a lot of, not always, since 2006, since this abstinence started, I have done a lot of work to maintain my program. I do read, write, pray, and meditate in the morning. I do sponsor. I do have a sponsor. I do plan my food. I do eat according to my food plan. I do weigh and measure in my house, not outside of my house. Still do a lot of service. Still like to do service. I still go to a lot of meetings. I like to go to meetings. I check in with my higher power through the day. That's really the big difference, because if I just check in the morning and at night, it's so easy for me to run my day. But now it's really got to be about asking for guidance all through the day, checking in lots of times. So it's not me in charge of myself, because me in charge of myself is not a good idea and doesn't have a good result. And, I've been given, especially through the big book, these ideals for how to live my life. Like, love and tolerance is my code, which is, it's huge. It's gigantic if you think about it. It's like, I'm supposed to love everybody. I'm supposed to tolerate everybody, even the people that are really hard to love, even the people that are really hard to tolerate. This is what my higher power wants from me. I don't have the power to do it, but my higher power will give me the power if I'm willing and if I stop clinging to my judgments of all the crap they're doing wrong. So, yeah, I am supposed to love even the people that I disagree with or that disagree with me or that have different politics or whatever. It's a big ask, but I don't expect to get there. I just expect to continue growing in that direction. We rely on the term progress, not perfection, in lots of ways. I think this is a place where it applies, that I should always be showing spiritual growth. I should always be progressing toward more love and tolerance. And that's my code. That's my code. It was given to me by my higher power through this program. So I'm very grateful to all the people, all the sponsors I've had, all the, friends in recovery that I see at meetings all the time. I feel like we march arm in arm together and help each other along the way. But ultimately, it's about the relationship between me and my higher power, clearing out the junk that I have in my brain and in my past, so that the channel between my higher power and me is clear, so I can get the good direction, so I can act rightly in the world. and continue getting the gifts, the huge gifts that I've been given. So that's it from me. I'm eager to hear what others have to share. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you so much, Susie, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope.